Okay, calling the meeting to order.
We've got another meeting.
If any member of the public, any member of the public may speak on any item which is on the agenda, the board will only allow comments by members of the public on any item on the agenda during consideration of the item. When the item is called, please raise your hand and the chair will recognize you, the general public, at the beginning of the regular agenda during the public comment period may address matters under the jurisdiction of the board and not on the posted agenda. However, any person wishing to make a presentation must submit their issue in written form. With copies furnished to board members, presentations will be limited to 3 minutes. Okay, with that, go ahead and get started. It takes me a moment to scroll. Roll call.
Okay, Lynn Betancourt.
Here.
Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Jim DeMartini. Mike Fisher. Gordon Ford.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Clarence Willman.
Here.
Linda Stotts Burnett.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Announcements.
Just have one brief announcement, is that all retirement board members should have received the strategic planning workshops April 28th and 29th, 2010.
We haven't quite got it yet.
No.
This is the members forum.
Yeah, okay. During members forum, you will be receiving this strategic planning workshop. Make sure you hold on to these when you get them.
Okay. Public comment. Michelle, did you want to speak on anything?
No, I think I don't have anything to say right now.
Consent items.
Move for approval.
Do we have a motion?
Second.
Do we want to have any discussion? There you go. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved.
Moving right along.
Administrator.
Okay, we have a discussion and action on the SACRS nominating committee's amended and final recommended ballot for the SACRS Board of Directors. SACRS submitted an amended ballot showing that the slate of officers includes the three, president and secretary and vice president, who are incumbents as willing to run again, but the treasurer apparently was not, so that one is vacant. But that is currently the amended final recommended ballot for SACRS officers, and you can act to have a representative, who I believe is Maria at this point, vote for those officers.
Move for that action.
We have a motion.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any additional discussion? Okay, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? A little more enthusiasm.
Should we, on that same point, should we also enable, or is it already done for Maria to vote for anybody who might come to the slate late for the treasury by her selection?
Sure, and authorize any other decisions that she may have made at the business meeting. I think that would be
other things may come up.
Sure.
And there.
Okay. I would move for that action.
Additionally.
Was that an additional motion?
Additional motion.
Okay.
I have a second.
I'll second.
Okay. Motion and a second. That's basically allow me and or the alternate to make...
risking an alternate, too.
Additional decisions.
Additional decisions voting at SACRS this year.
Yeah.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Okay. Staff report.
Okay, we have a staff report on the update of the Tyler Technology System, how complete it is to date. Kathy Herman and Joyce Parker.
And projector.
Is that better or you want this one?
Getting warm, so we had to turn it off.
It's actually been 2 years since you've had a full report on this project. And so I have a little bit of a story to tell you. Kind of had a rocky beginning. It definitely has a good ending, but I was not the only person in this story that I'm going to be talking about. So I brought some of my fellow co-workers in with me to help make sure I don't miss any really important points for you. Okay, this is our integrated pension software system. And what is integrated pension software? It's actually a system that will import member information, track contributions and service, calculate the benefits, and pay the allowance until the very last beneficiary is deceased. Now, unlike typical payroll type records where people go away, so do their records have to go away, we maintain records on any one member from 20 to 70 years. That's a long time to have information in a format that we can access it, and hopefully the people after me can access it. A little bit of project history. We actually signed this contract in 2003. In 2004, we had a major Stansera reorganization. In 2005, our vendor did a major platform change. They decided to upgrade how they were actually building their system for us. It slowed things down, but it definitely benefited us. And then in 2006, the original company that we contracted with was acquired by another agency, a large, much larger technology company. The Stansera team refused to give up, and in January 2010, our full system finally went live. Okay, the first part of the process, the first part of the story, was that everything we did prior to Tyler had to be manually dissected and documented by us before the vendor could put it into a format we could use. We did not go with an established system. We have a custom-built system, and they did not have all the 37 Act rules built in. That took a couple of years by itself to complete. In 2004, we stepped back. This project was seriously behind schedule and on target to go way over budget. So we had to come up with a new game plan, and we decided to go in with a phased-in approach. Joyce?
And we'd like to just explain a little bit why we chose to go with a phased-in approach as opposed to doing everything all at once. There were some good reasons for that. For one thing, the Tyler system was very complex. It has three databases, hundreds, thousands of tables, tens of thousands of fields. There's a lot there that we were going to have to deal with, and we couldn't digest it all at once. Plus, there was no documentation of their system, and we had written up the documentation of our current processes. Our legacy systems did have limitations, and there were significant vulnerabilities, but trying to do it all at once, we didn't have the staff to do that, and we determined that it was very feasible for us to do first the active, all in one chunk, and then after that stabilized and we were comfortable with it, then move over to the retired. So that's the approach we took. It fit with our systems that we had at the point. It fit with our staffing and our other limitations that we had. I think it worked out well.
It did. We didn't kill off anybody. One of the first things we came into realization as well when we decided we were going to phase this in is we were coming from three or four major electronic systems, and we had to get them converted into the Tyler system. They were proving to be incredibly problematic. So at this point, we realized we had a couple of options. We could spend a whole bunch more money and hire consultants, contract to have this work done, or we could utilize our own staff. So we sent Joyce, and that's Joyce right with wrong direction. That's Joyce right there on the airplane. We sent her back to our vendor. She worked with our vendor for a week, learning and understanding and sharing information, and got a really good handle on the table structures for this system, and she was able to give them a lot of good information about our data, and we were able to do this in-house. We partnered with our vendor, and we did not have to spend an extra $100,000 to pay somebody else to do this. We were determined to stick within our budget as much as possible. Okay, once we had the active member information in the system, the historic information, we had to come up with we needed to make sure we had a very reliable way to import current member data. And this is a piece of the system that Natalie Elliott uses biweekly, daily, practically. And so I'm going to let her talk a little bit about this, and she's going to share a little bit about how we used to do this.
Tyler's system has provided a much more streamlined process for posting contributions. An example is City of Ceres used to send me a floppy disk with a Excel spreadsheet on it through the mail with their check. That floppy disk had social security numbers, addresses, names, everything in it. I would take that information, put it into Excel, which I would have to format the columns and everything for me to be able to transfer it into Lotus, and then obtain that from Lotus through the Access, Microsoft Access program, before, so I could post it into the legacy system. It was crazy. Now, City of Ceres simply uploads their data into a secure website that I can access and import directly into Tyler without manipulating any data or touching any other data. The Tyler system validation process, which has multiple validations for data, is an invaluable tool. All the data is compared to the current data, and any exceptions are provided to me in a report. Any mishaps that are caught, any mishaps that are reported are caught and corrected as the data is imported on a biweekly or weekly basis, however often I need to do it, rather than during the file audit for a biweekly. Voice their appreciation for this validation process because it provides a check for the accuracy of the data they're sending us. So it's a nice system.
So we've actually been using this part of the system, a return on our initial investment, for over 4 years now. Now, that process that Natalie explained to you that she did for the City of Ceres, a couple hundred employees, she also did for the 4,000 employees that the county has. So that was incredibly, three different databases, three different applications. So she was spending all her time just getting the information into the system. Now she spends her time verifying, checking, going back to the employers. The employers fix things rather than wait on them because we couldn't get to them. And we just didn't have the tools to do these validations. But as we go forward, we're getting more and more and more accurate information in our system. This can only benefit everybody. Our smaller districts, we actually have a separate web-based module that our smaller districts can use. And because StanCog is behind the county's firewall, they're already using it. There's still work to be done in the future as far as opening the county firewall to let the smaller districts do this. The county's not ready for that, so we said, okay, we'll just go forward this way. But even that, it has been in use for over 4 years now. So again, we've already been getting a return on our investment here. We have not been wasting anybody's money here. This Tyler system is providing us a place to consolidate and store all member data. And if you remember, I said 50 to 70 years worth of data. That's a long time. But what we do know is historic data was on 5A8 cards, oversized payroll books. We actually have the microfiche system in our office now. We went and got it from payroll. And a couple of multiple electronic systems. So what our staff has done is taken on this enormous project of auditing every single member's file from the date of hire to the date of their retirement to verify that their service is correct. Because what we have found is while contributions have been overall very accurate and very correct for many, many, many years, service, we were completely reliant upon the employers to give us that information, and a lot of times it was not accurate. And we had information in there that they hadn't paid for, people need to buy it back, getting that cleaned up because we have a place to keep it now. So it's worthwhile to do the work now. So it's a huge project. We have at least 3,800 more files to go. It'll probably continue forward. We'll have a place to keep it. So now it's 2006. We're marching right along here, and we've got our data. So now what? We had to have a way to get all this data back out of the system in a form that was really useful for us. Again, we've been using this piece of the system for over 3 years. This is our benefits calculator. We call it the estimator. We've processed about 82 estimates this month alone because some of what's going on with the county and the employers and the possible retirement incentive programs. Our members are trying to make lifetime decisions on the numbers we get them. And where it used to take us anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks to turn around an estimate for our members, we're getting it back to them in a couple weeks now. So this is a huge customer service issue for us, and we're really excited to be able to give that to them. These forms here that are as well, these also are coming right out of the system. So we have the information. We don't have to continually rekey things. We don't have to continually use spreadsheets to get our information. And the system gives us the forms, gives us the reports and the contracts. They're consistent and they're accurate. It has absolutely streamlined several processes, freed people up to do a much better job in other areas and do other little projects as well as they come up. The buyback calculator. Our form actually used to say you have up to six, we had 6 months to get a buyback back to a member. When I first saw that form, when I came over to this department in 2004, I was just amazed. How could anything take up to 6 months? But that's how we had to do it. Manually do the research, we had spreadsheets built. They were great spreadsheets, but they were still spreadsheets, and everything in them had to be entered in again and again and again. And if a member came back and said, well, I can't afford that right now, and they came back 2 years later, we kind of started over again. Now the buyback calculator populates the data automatically through the system. It minimizes rekeying, calculates the buyback itself with the interest, and that includes the semi-annual interest that gets posted every 6 months. It generates the contracts, the payments, and continues to track the payments. So, and it posts the service, so once we know it, it's in there, it's right. And again, we've been using this one for over 2 years. So we phased it in, we've made good use of our time and our money. This is one of my favorites, and I know I've told you this before. This is a very streamlined process. This process was so far behind when I was hired. I believe they actually had a separate spreadsheet created as a workaround so we could do a withdrawal of funds, because this was such a laborious task, we couldn't get to it. Member statements were not getting out on time. And so thanks to the detailed work staff did on laying out the process and getting the specifications right, the developer was able to get the system up and running. We've been using it for 3 years now. Member statements, whether we post interest or not, go out on time twice a year within a couple of weeks of the end of the period. This has been a very fun tool to work with, just because you really feel the difference in this one. Refunds of contributions. We've been using this one for over 2 years as well, and this is another module that Natalie uses all the time.
As with the other modules, the refund process has been streamlined into a more efficient and accurate process. Prior to Tyler, all the information for the refund was hand and keyed into three different spreadsheets for preparation. With Tyler, nothing is hand keyed except the date of the check and any rollover institution information that's provided by the member. All amounts are automatically transferred from the active member tables into the refund module with a couple clicks of the button. It's that simple. The refund module calculates taxes, federal and state, accurately, and it accommodates multiple payees. Say on a death benefit, somebody has 5 kids, it automatically allocates that benefit between the 5 payees. Again, efficiency and accuracy have been enhanced with this module.
What's great about this is, you know, because we do the work up front, when we need it, we can get to it fairly quickly. The workload really hasn't changed. We've shifted how we're doing it, and we're doing it more efficiently, and we're able to service our members quicker. They don't know how much more work we've been doing before they ever got here. But when they send something to us and they need information, we can turn it around faster. So that's really been a bonus as far as our members are concerned. And a beautiful part of the refund upon contribution module is even if a member withdraws all their funds, once it's been posted, if they come back to work for the county or one of our employers and decide to redeposit the money, which actually happens a lot, we actually have quite a few people say they come to work for the county, have a couple children, decide they're going to stay home for a while, those kids are in high school, suddenly everything's more expensive and they come back to work at the county. So they want to redeposit their contributions. We have to be able to calculate all the interest that was lost and what it's going to cost for them to pay that back. Because of this system, once the information's in, it's still there. And we can pull it back out and it will recalculate it for us. We don't have to go out and dig out the file, go shuffling through all the information and rekeying everything again. So like I said, because of work we're doing ahead of time, we're not going to have to continually redo it in the future. The reports. Reports have come live as we've needed them, as we brought modules up and going. They've been in production for 2 to 4 years. Some of them are very, very complicated. They're pulling from half a dozen different places. And we call pretty much everything a report. It's a report, memos, contracts, checks, the advices, even a mailing list, statements. They're system generated. They're accurate and they're consistent. So every time we do member statements, they look the same. Every 6 months, members get a member statement. It looks just like the last one did, but the dollar amounts are different. That helps because people start recognizing this is an important document to look at. This is their money. And one of the things we found with that is because they're used to seeing what's on the document and starting to recognize it, we've had a lot of people notice that their former spouses are still their beneficiaries. And suddenly we're getting information from our members that we weren't able to get before. And then something would unfortunately happen to a member, and then we're trying to deal with a former spouse and a new spouse, and this has really helped a lot, because people are, because they're accurate and they're consistent, our members can rely on the information we're sending them. And I can't say enough though that this entire team did a fabulous job before the system. This is just making it easier for us to do a better job. Everything, and our reports are also pre-populated, and what's really fun is accessible. We can change them if we need to. We're not stuck with them. The vendor may have created them, but we know how to access them. We know how to make modifications when we need to. Okay, it's 2008. We've at least accomplished something. We've been at this for a couple of years, and the active member side of the system is working, and we're using it. So what's next?
Now we were able to focus on the next phase. We've had a lot of phases up to now, but the next phase is retiree. We're going to start with the data conversion, move on to payroll, all the year-end processes, and the actuary extract, which is a treat, oddly so, but it is. First off, you have to know that when somebody goes from the active side to the retired side in this system, it's seamlessly linked. All the data that we put in for contribution, salary, service, everything else is still available for the lifetime of the retiree, and all retirees' beneficiaries will always know how many years they worked, how much they contributed, and how much their final average salary. We can prove that at any point if it ever became contested. Retirees eventually die, ALD. When that happens, the Tyler system now can take care of that. When a retiree dies, there's potentially several options. One of them is return of unused contributions. The system keeps track of how much they've been paid and compares it to the contributions and gives us that option. It also sets up the correct payments for the deceased estate and the beneficiary, the prorated benefits, sets up all the beneficiary payments or payroll stuff. It tracks both the benefit payments for the retiree and the beneficiary separately, so we can always tell who got paid what at any point. And we can set up the $5,000 death benefit if that's appropriate. It does all this automatically, but it does not do it on autopilot. We still need people who know what they're looking at to look at this stuff, make sure it's correct, because things can be entered wrong. If the beneficiary's not entered in there correctly, we're not going to have the right stuff spit out of the system. It's one of the reasons why we're doing the audits on all the files, and it's also one of the reasons it's very important to keep the educated staff that we have.
I have to say that retiree death benefits was one of the more complicated specs to put together, because depending on what a member option the member chose as an option when they retired makes a very definite change in what's going to happen if they are deceased, when they deceased, early in retirement, later in retirement. So there's so many factors involved in any of those decisions that the system had to go out and find all these things, and we had to lay it out in a way, manner that we could. Most of those very complicated processes are still calculated and researched by hand through spreadsheets, and this system gives us a place to reconcile them. So we don't have people coming back later going, are you sure this is right? And we work hard at getting everything right. But with the system, and because of some of the complicated choices that our members have to make and beneficiaries have to make, this really has helped us streamline these processes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's also proven well for the audit process, because I had a meeting with the internal auditor last week and told him that we do a spreadsheet and then we compare it with what the computer is processing, and he was very pleased with that.
Good points. Next thing, we had to focus on the payroll, of course. We actually started running payroll through Tyler in, I think it was September 2008. Through 2008, we ran a few payrolls, we worked out some of the processes, we worked out some of the bugs. Then in 2009, we started doing real parallel payrolls. And throughout 2009, we ran two payrolls every month in both the old StamPass system and in Tyler. By June, we were comfortable and confident in what we were getting out of Tyler. It was accurate, it was correct, and it was easy. The old system, let me tell you, that thing broke all the time. I couldn't go on vacation. Payroll time was coming up. But we ran throughout 2009 both systems because we wanted to be able to compare end-of-year processes. That's very important. If you don't have all the data in both systems, you can't compare the end-of-year stuff. So we did that. At the end of 2009, we ran the 1099s in most systems. I'm not even there yet. But we did. And we were happy with the results. We printed the 1099s out of the Tyler system. And we dropped using the StamPass system entirely. Some of the other things that came out of that are part of payroll now is the health insurance deduction upload. We get a transaction file monthly from BMTI. What deductions are appropriate for that month. They're always changing. People are coming and going and changing their insurance. So we have to upload transactions for the month. That's now a pretty easy, straightforward process. The COLA calculation can all be done within Tyler. Before, the data was actually extracted from the system, actually put on a laptop, and sometimes it would even leave the premises for massaging, and then come back and be re-uploaded to the system. There's all kinds of security potential there, as well as, frankly, there's a lot of room for error. This is done within the system. It's easy to verify. Any benefit or deduction changes can be handled within the system. We just did it with the RESCO update. We have alternate addressing. We have a lot of snowbirds, and we can do that. So as a result, at this point, one person with the right background can run the payroll in half the time that it took us. And I can go on vacation.
Well, we keep using the word easy. We worked really, really hard to get to this easy part. And staff still does a lot of verification, but it's freed us up in some ways, like I said, to take care of our members faster and do the audits and get all this information into the system.
And I can't stress more that it's not autopilot. We still need Michelle.
She can't control. No. You guys could do it. The help menu is so good. Anybody could pick it up and process it.
Tyler system now also encompasses all the quarterly and end-of-year processes. 1099s seem like they should be kind of a slam dunk, and conceptually they are, if it weren't for all the exceptions, which will always get you, and these are just some of them. Like most things, 90% of the processes take 10% of the time. The actuary abstract. You'd think only an actuary would be excited about that, but I got excited about it. Mainly because of this. Well, this is a big piece of it. It used to take me a week to extract, massage, prepare, package, and send off what the actuary needed. And they would come back and ask various questions because they're looking at consistency between this data and the data that they've received in previous years. We have spent a lot of time over the years that I've been here perfecting our data, cleaning it up, getting it very clean. I think it's great now. What we used to get from the actuary, we used to get pages and pages and pages of explain this discrepancy, what's this discrepancy, what are all... I think we got maybe 24 this year. Probably not a whole 24. We're doing really good. And it only takes a few minutes now. It's great.
I was actually able to use that extract when we had the public records request for the over $100,000 pension, and Joyce was on vacation. We finally let her go on vacation. And I was able to, because I do not have the level of skill with the databases that Joyce has, but I was able to pull the information I needed. I used this extract as my base, as my flat file, a great big giant Excel spreadsheet, took out the stuff I didn't need, like Social Security numbers and birth dates, things like that, and was able to use that then to as our base for gathering the rest of the information we needed. So, yes, the actuaries love it, Joyce loves it, but it also gives us the ability to use it for other projects as well.
Yeah, and in fact, I thought the actuaries asked for everything in the kitchen sink, but they didn't quite ask for as much as I thought. And when we were designing this, we put everything that we could possibly put in there so that in the next few years, when they say, oh, yeah, we want this little piece of data, we want you to include that, we could probably say it's already there. So we were trying to look way down in the future as to what they're going to need and for our use here, because we can use this for everything and anything.
Michelle, did you use it for the RESCO?
Yes,
full as well.
I did use it for the RESCO poll to identify for authorizations, to update on the authorizations.
It's great to be able to have a tool that more than one person can access. Okay, as Michelle mentioned, we have something really nifty. Prior to this Tyler system, we really had minimal documentation on our processes and any of the systems as well. So Joyce and I kind of put our heads together. We had built a lot of documentation, and we also had to make sure staff knew how to use our system. And so we decided we needed a place to put it. So we designed this help menu. We had our vendor add it to the system. It didn't cost anything extra. And everything is documented and available through this web-based help menu. And it's a fluid process. We can update them. In fact, it's on our schedule to update these documents on a regular basis. We have to have this for disaster recovery. We have to have it for succession planning, any type of training. And so we're not bottlenecked anymore. We're not waiting on any one person to get a huge major function done. If somebody's not here and we have to do something, we may not need all the information. Well, one day I was trying to do something. Our receptionist was not here. I didn't know where she stored it. I was actually even able to go find her desk manual and find out where it was, which, okay, now I've got it. I can go forward and take and help our member. So, again, it's really increased our customer service. We've been using this for over a year, and all staff has the ability to update this and keep it fluid and keep it current so we won't ever get quite so far behind again. There are a couple other benefits to having this in place, and one of them is a five-year maintenance and support contract. This is in addition to the actual project contract itself, but we've truly gone from a single specially trained IT person who had to maintain multiple old electronic systems to now we have a committed team of developers that are accessible to us by phone or internet. For any type of system support we need. A few times we do have to get in and they have to do stuff. They use whatever web internet stuff they need, go right into our system. They have the access. They can tell us what to fix or fix it for us if we need it. So this is a really big piece for us. We're not, again, totally dependent on any one person to get anything done. As I mentioned, disaster recovery once or twice. Truly, our disaster recovery system has gone from a laptop stored in somebody's closet, and it took and now we're on a secure server on the East Coast. A single person with special skills was needed to access our laptop that was stored in the closet, and you had to have the key to the house that had the closet. And all the way to now we have a very flexible, secure system that if you have a laptop and you have the internet and you have the access codes, you can run a payroll. We can run a payroll just like they did in Katrina. This system is how they put out payroll for a couple of the cities in Louisiana, and they did it by phone call. So we can do stuff like that, and I hope we don't ever need to. Now we have the ability to do it. We've gone from nothing being documented or minimal documentation, to be quite honest, it's hard to say nothing, to a fully documented processes and system. We used to have periodic backup of our data. I think, Michelle, you told me they used to back up payroll once a month.
After payroll, and the instructions were on little post-it notes on the server in the back.
So all of our data and our application is backed up nightly. So again, if something were to happen, we're not going to be dead in the water. We're not waiting for somebody to come in, and we can get where we need to go. This is also linked to the county's continuity of operations system that they have. So if one of us doesn't know how to access this information, if we can get to the county site, then we can get the information we need to get here. So again, we've got several redundant systems in place that are not incredibly labor-intensive or expensive. So as you can see, we've come a long way. We've built a really big system with the help of the entire office and a good team of people on the East Coast. I started talking with a Boston accent after a while, but it worked pretty well. We have at least three databases in this system alone. There's like almost 1,600 tables, 41,000 fields, and 22 plus million rows of data in our system, and because we posted payroll, it went up today. So that's continually going up. It took 137 programs plus sub-programs just to get this system going. Almost 1,300 stored procedures, which are kind of like mini-programs. Over 200 reports, many of them are custom reports just that we use, and then our very useful Stansara created help documents. So we have a few things left. I kind of liken it to graduating from college. I've been going to college now for 7 years, and I'm going to walk down the aisle because I just have to take one PE class left. So I'm going to celebrate that we are done. We have a fully active, fully live system. We've archived our old databases. We can see them. We don't have to maintain them anymore. But we do have 71 issues that are kind of hanging out there. And as with any IT system, you're going to have a few issues. 31 of those are still impacting production in some way. There, none of them are showstoppers. We're moving forward. Every one of them will be fixed. The team in Boston is committed to fixing them. They will get done. We're actually currently working on them right now. And the other 40 will make our system better. They're enhancements. Again, it's nothing, not going to cost us anything extra. They've committed to fixing them and finishing it up for us. So
I recognize some of those administrators there.
We won't name names.
I felt the camp, yes.
So, at the conclusion of any large, significant project, and a lot of small projects, I think it's important to step back, evaluate, and see where have we been? What have we done right? What have we done wrong? What could we do better? What did we learn from this? This slide compares Stan Sara, how we did things and why, with another Sarah that we don't have to name. We chose the phased-in approach. They chose one single live date, their live date. Looking at the bottom, yeah, it took us 7 years. It took them 4 years. It took us a whole lot less money. There's a lot of reasons why people make those choices, whether one single go live or phased-in. For us, it fit to phase it in. We didn't have the staff to do everything at once. We didn't have the budget to hire an army of consultants. We had distinct existing systems that we could phase in. They weren't dependent on each other. It fit for us. It worked. And I think it worked out better for us because we really own the system. We know the system. We know it inside and out. We own it. Not just because we paid for it. Different ways. It worked out well, though. And there's some things I think that we would do different were we to start over.
But we're not
going
to start over.
Please go.
You do know that you did start over. The Stanpak was a problem system that was created in another manner that didn't work out. And so we learned from that bad experience.
You know, Lynn, I got the code. And I had to maintain that system by actually going in and making programming changes so we could work through a payroll. And I'm so glad to be done with it.
Oh, it was horrendous.
But it did what it had to do. For the period, it did it. And now it's done and we're moving on.
And we've learned a lot. And when Joyce was finished working on that system, she was able to bring the payroll system up, and partly that's why that took less time than the whole other part of the system. Because we had sent Joyce back east, and she had had the opportunity to train with the vendor and work with them on their table structure, the second conversion went much quicker than the first one did. So, truly, every member of the staff has helped us find the bugs, helped us fix it, helped us improve it. And it's turned out to be a very useful tool for our staff. So a little bit of cost control information on a phase-in. We started out with a contract of $896,000. And as you remember, that was the company, you mentioned, Lynn, the previous system went bankrupt. They couldn't hold it. So in this one here, the company we contracted with got acquired by another system, which was really good because I think they were getting nervous. And so we only approved 5 change orders. In 7 years, we only approved 5 change orders. And 4 of those were because there was board policy changes from the time we started till the time we finished. And the 5th one I call it a buyback Excel spreadsheet feed. It was actually an upload of part-time hours that came from PeopleSoft, where we actually used to go to the screen, look at the PeopleSoft payroll, write down the part-time dates, hours, and money, and then manually key it into a spreadsheet in order to get our information. We worked with the auditor's office, and they were able to pull it out of PeopleSoft automatically. We worked with our developer, and she was able to set it up so the system could take it in automatically. You can imagine that saved a huge amount of staff time and possible error issues. So that was a well worth it of a change order. So we didn't use any consultants, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
As we go forward and things change, whether it be policies or whatever, I'm assuming that there's enough flexibility in the system that we can build on that. So going forward, we're not going to go back to ground zero.
No, we are not. That was really awesome part about this. Because of all the databases, because of all the fields and all those things that is built in, they have the flexibility. We have a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of stuff we can do. Just because we know our system and we know and we can make it work for us. We've already come up with workarounds of our own system to make it work better, you know, type of a thing. But going forward, absolutely, if the county decides they want, well, if they go back, it sounds like they're going back to Tier 2. Tier 2 is already in the system. We don't have to do anything if the county reopens Tier 2. So go ahead and just Tier 2. Don't get crazy and don't come up with anything new for us. But no, we're already set up for that, for what the county is recommending on Tier 2. The incentive programs, because we have the opportunity to get all these new pay codes in because of the retirement incentive program that the county is working on. It has absolutely bumped up our workload because people want this information and they want it now. They're trying to make really major decisions on stuff. And so I think we've had almost processed like 82 estimates this month alone because people are trying to figure out what they're going to do. And that's all new. That's all factors we're not used to having. So yes, we do have a lot of flexibility in the system. It might cost some money to make a major change, but we do not have to go backwards. And a lot of it has to do with how the system is built.
Thank you.
Like I said, we didn't use any consultants, we didn't have any overtime, and our staff is well-trained and informed, and we have lots of documentation. So I think if we did have another major change come at us, just as a team alone, we would be so much better at doing the developing specs and sorting out exactly what we need. It would go much faster and be much more cost effective. So in closing, I would just like to say thank you to the board for budgeting this amount of money so we could do this project, and for your patience in waiting for us to finish it. So we have, it's streamlined a lot of processes. Our workload hasn't gone down, it's just changed. We're excited about having the ability to get all this information correctly into a single system in front of the request. Where prior they would ask for a buyback, we'd have to do all this research before we could get to them. As we're auditing these files, we'll just keep going forward. So I just want to say thank you very much and ask if anybody else has any questions.
I think you guys have done an excellent job in working through these 7 years of, is that like the 7 year itch? Anyways, it's you've done an excellent job. And actually, it really is a very small price that we paid. Being familiar with some of the other programs that are in development and so forth, this was done on a very economical basis. And I think the product that we came up with, that was come up with for us and with you, is excellent.
Yes, thank you very much. And I have to say the vendor overall has been easy to work with. Things didn't necessarily always go as fast as we wanted them to go, but we weren't always able, because of some of our limitations, able to turn it back to them as fast as they gave it to us. But once we got things flowing, they've been pretty easy to work with. And if we do run into something that stops us, whoa, wait a minute, this isn't working, so the top developers are on it right away because they think we're like, you know, they know us now. They've been talking to us for so long. So they respond very quickly to us. So I look forward to that continuing as we go forward.
I'm very happy with the success you have, because this was the promise that was made for PACPA, for Stanton.
Yes.
And that program, we had to pay for overtime for people, extra staff members. It was horrendous, and it was a nightmare in the end. It did some function, but it was not what it was promised. And we finally got into what was promised, what, probably 15 years ago, something like that.
It's,
I don't know,
it's
10
incredible
years
ago. As we were going through the processes, and like I said, before I started, a lot of work had been done on those processes and the documentation. But it was incredible for me to see the intricate spreadsheets that had been developed by staff to get this work done. Some of them are just pages and pages and pages deep of formulas, and they were pretty incredible tools. So it's really fun to be able to move it forward and see it go into the next generation.
That's a great job.
Thank you.
Next, we move on to correspondence.
Okay, we received, San Sara Retirement Board received, actually on March 25th, 2010, a letter from the RESCA Board of Directors asking questions about the excess earnings policy. And as you remember, the board set up a committee in the fall of 2009 to develop changes to the excess earnings policy that would reflect tying in retiree ad hoc benefits to the funded status of Stan Sara, instead of just saying, oh, gee, we had a negative 17% return this year, oh, but this year we have a 15% return, so maybe we had 7% above the normal 8% this year, so we must have some excess earnings. Actually looking at what the funded status of Stan Sara is before looking at whether there are excess earnings for ad hoc benefits, and also requiring that there be a few years of the excess earnings on top of the funded status to ensure that the system just didn't start passing out ad hoc benefits and then all of a sudden the funded status went down or we stopped having excess earnings. This policy was developed by a committee in December, brought to the board in January for the proposed language to be adopted. And then that proposed language in mid-January was sent to RESCO Board of Directors for their input, with a deadline at the end of April for their input on the proposed policy. And then towards the end of March, they sent this letter with some questions about the excess earnings policy, which the board members had received. And I developed a response to that. The response is about a two-page letter and then various attachments that they have requested related to the excess earnings policy history, revisions, purposes, and so forth, as noted in the letter. And so we look for the board's direction at this point in time as to whether this letter and attachments are sufficient, or if you'd like some other format or other wording. The RESCA board has requested a deadline of April 15th to receive this information, which is tomorrow. So they had 2 months to get us the letter they got us, and we had 2 weeks basically to turn around your response. So there it is, and there's a response. And we'd be happy to have the board's input into the response and make any changes so we can get this off tomorrow.
I was not on the board at the time the policy was submitted to RESCO. But I have some concerns that in response on this letter, that you were unable to do some of the actions that they asked because of time and the time constraints on you. And that's because the turnaround that they have is part of that. And I don't see an immediacy for a need to move forward on this, unless somebody can explain to me why we need to move forward that quickly. I would think that we could extend the deadline and fulfill those additional research requests. Do you know about how long you would need for those kinds of items? Extensive research?
And I don't know if RESCA Board of Directors would have additional questions if we gave it to them in a certain format, or if we'd have to discuss, you know, exactly what do they need or what would they like to see. I don't know what kind of detail they're looking for. So until those questions are asked and answered, it would be hard to know that time frame for response.
Well, if they were generalized, I think it's asking the question in a general sense to begin with. But you're right, they could be more specific. But in a general sense, it's asking what would be this impact in terms of, I think, how would it impact benefits year by year in a general sense. Like, for example, an average dollar amount or an average percentage, something like that. if that were the fact, about how long do you think that might take?
Perhaps a month or two. I don't know for sure.
I think this is an important enough thing that we should postpone action on it for you to be able to come up with at least a time frame, and then see where we're at, and I give it another month or so to see if that those responses could be done properly within that time frame. And obviously, RESCO doesn't have to be satisfied to the fullest extent that they might be, but I'm also concerned that there's something else that RESCO did not address, and we did not address. Maybe it's not factual, but my review is that the funds for the death benefit come directly from excess earnings. If we, and by this policy, wipe out excess earnings, we wipe out the death penalty, the death benefit. And we've wiped out two benefits this year. This would be a third benefit change. Because if there's no monies in excess earnings, then there's no monies to pay the $5,000 death benefit, despite the fact the Board of Supervisors approved it.
Well, and for one thing, the Board of Supervisors did approve it. We have set aside over $5 million in that, and any of the excess earnings, this policy specifically states that any of the excess earnings or non-valuation reserves that were set aside prior to July 1 of 2009 are still at the Retirement Board's discretion. So this board could still maintain those excess earnings and maintain that benefit.
So this letter, essentially, Tom, responds to what you can respond to from RESCO.
Mm-hmm.
And they can sort through this, and if they have more questions, they can come back to us.
Mm-hmm.
Our action of a few months ago stands, and they can look at this and then come back, and if they have more questions, we can consider how we handle those.
And actually, that was my thought, is we give RESCO this information, pretty much provides kind of the general information that they want, to keep going back and forth to see what questions RESCO wants to ask. I think maybe if we give them this, then they can provide us with more questions related specifically to that.
This may take care of a lot of their issues.
As party to one of those who drafted the request,
mm-hmm.
But we wanted to know, generally speaking, is if this policy were in place years ago,
mm-hmm.
What would have happened to the benefits that the retirees received over the last period of time? And that's all we were asking. What generally would have happened? We didn't need to have what happened to my benefits or somebody else's benefits. We didn't have to have the exact dollar amount, but a general concept. And I think that was the idea. And that information can't be provided at this time. And I understand that. But if we just send this letter out the way it stands, as you're stating, then they have 15 days to respond. But we recognize that that 15 days might not mean anything, because suppose they were to respond, say, the 28th of April, or we're going to be in meetings here, but not in meetings that deliberate this matter. We're going to be, people are going to be going to the conference for the state retirement group. There's a real possibility that we will not be able to get back to this body in a timely fashion for this body to act. I would urge, and I will urge RESCO to get back to this body in a timely fashion. But even then, the clock's ticking for the 30th. And I'm not sure we can get the board members together, the retirees. They're spread them all over.
Well, Madam Chair, what I would recommend is we have a letter here from RESCO that our administrator has tried, based upon time constraints, to respond to in as much detail as possible. They have a date for response on there of April the 15th. I understand what Lynn is saying, and being a part of RESCO, and obviously being a part of their response, but we have a deadline on here on the 15th. And I would agree with the comments that you made and Mr. Lynch made, that if they want to have some follow-up inquiries, and if that's their only inquiry as far as what the financial impact would have been if this would have been in place 10 years ago, then that's pretty simple. And my response to that would be, Mr. Betancourt can work with staff And with his historical background, I mean, I'm sure that working with staff and Tom, that that response can be done in a timely fashion. But I would say that we respond now based upon the deadline that's been imposed by the RESCO Board of Directors. And that, I would make a motion to that effect.
Your motion is to send this letter?
Correct.
I would second that motion.
We have a second. Further discussion?
I would support that motion if we were able to conclude the additional information. Well, I don't know whether we can do that or not.
Being in your position with the knowledge that you have and the fact that you have extra time on your hands as a retiree, and that you can work with staff, retirement staff, and the administrator on coming up with a response, I don't see a problem with that. Excuse me. I think that would expedite the process, and we can respond in fashion to some of the other things that have been asked of this body by RESCO, in the deadline that's stated in the letter. Excuse me. So I understand that, but I think there's a way to get around that and expedite the process in line with what you're saying. So I'll stick with my original motion.
I would request one small thing, and that is that we put this back on the agenda for a review of the situation on the next meeting, so that if there is something that comes in, we can have that on the agenda ready to work with. If there's nothing that comes in, you know, if we have run into an impasse that we have need more information and need an extended time, we can ask for that at that time. It might be brief. It might be a week or two. If it doesn't work out, then no one's harmed.
Right.
So
at the meeting, the only meeting in May, which is the latter part of May, correct, Tom?
That's correct.
Staff and Mr. Betancourt can give us an update on where we're at with the one sole response that apparently is still outstanding. Yeah. And with that modification, I'll stick to my original motion.
Since we don't have a meeting until late in May, perhaps our deadline could be extended to before that time frame, giving staff enough time to analyze whatever comes through from RESCO. And giving them a few more days to work this out. I would suggest we just extend this.
Sorry, the deadline for this particular report or the one that's due tomorrow?
The one that's due from RESCO.
Okay.
Not this deadline. This deadline's fine. This report is fine for that purpose. Okay. I'm trying to come to a compromise to say, give RESCO some time in case we can gather that information and have a response. And if this is all they get as of tomorrow, and then they're trying to piece together this stuff, I'll try to work with staff, as my time permits, and see what we can come up with. But if we can't come up with anything, I think we can come up with something fairly quickly, I would guess.
Well, that's what it sounds like. I'm going off of what you're saying.
That's my understanding.
That's the only one remaining outstanding item. So I think we could have this wrapped up fairly quickly.
But I would ask for an extension to the 15th, if that can be
an
added.
Extension of what?
Of the
RESCO's response
until May 15th. So that RESCO does not have to respond to this, to the original request, until May 15th. And
I'm not so sure we should necessarily do that. I mean, this is information requested by RESCO. I'm assuming that RESCO, this is a policy that's been in place for at least, a couple of months now. It's been accessible. RESCO has historical information. And I'm saying that, in terms of what we've done in the past, what our policies were in terms of excess earnings, what the changes were to that excess earnings. So this is nothing new. This is not new information. And RESCO requested this latest information formally, so we're sending out this information that we have.
Yeah, fine.
And it's 62 pages long. I don't know if something's not in there.
I agree with the chair. I think we should send this letter. I have no problem with Lynn and the staff working with RESCO and trying to eliminate this discussion with more information, but I don't think we should schedule a review of excess earnings as an agenda item every meeting from now through the rest of the year based on whatever somebody comes up with next week. So I would stick to the motion that Darren made, and I would urge Tom, you and your staff to work with Lynn, and that information can be gathered in an expeditious way under Lynn's guidance to inform the discussion on RESCO's part. I'm more than happy that you do that. But I think we need to move forward and send Tom's letter.
So we have a motion and a second, and it basically is to approve the letter of response to RESCO, which is due tomorrow.
Correct.
As presented.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any additional comments? Okay. Then with that, all those
are, all I had a quick comment. My only concern is the one question it sounds like that they would like answered that it's not answered is that, so, you know, if the proposed policy were implemented 10 years ago, what would have been the, my concern is, I mean, our staff isn't going to be able to determine that. That would be something you'd have to get an actuary or someone. And I would not approve spending any money to answer this question. So I mean, if it's going to take, you know, a huge amount of time for the staff, or is this going to take, you know, discussion with an actuary, or if this is going to cost us any money, I would not agree with even trying to provide this information.
I agree with
only
you.
Because I don't think should be spending money on doing that. So that would be my only comment on the additional information they're requesting that we haven't already provided in this letter.
I think whatever resources are currently available to the administrator and his staff.
Yeah,
and
that's
working
all
that's with RESCO.
That's all it
is. Clarify.
I'm sure.
Okay. So having stated that, then all those in favor of this motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. The motion is moved. Okay, with that, we are ready to go into closed session.
I'll make a motion to move into closed session.
Okay, we have a motion. Second.
Because of the issue, I
have to
recuse
myself. It's all yours. Okay. So,
well, you may want to announce that vote because there was no record.
There was no record. We didn't go to closed session.
Mm-hmm. It will be on the minutes.
We voted to not go into closed session.
Right.
The motion was made, seconded, and the vote was against. The only aye vote was by Lynn Bettencourt. The rest of the board
negative.
Members present were nay votes. So with that, I mean, we didn't go into closed session, so there's really nothing to report out except for that. With that, we go to the members forum. So, Ron, we start with you.
I have nothing.
Nothing to report.
Nothing? No.
Yeah, I have some things. But first of all, the council and I discussed this matter, and I want to explain to this organization what's going on with me. I am a retiree, and though I am a retiree, I dropped that hat when I hit this door. My job here is a fiduciary, and I take that seriously. I ran for this board. I did not run for RESCO. I've been a board member in the distant past of RESCO and was appointed to that position, but I have no interest in those duties over these. These are the primary duties. So that's why I did not feel I had a conflict. I have not discussed this matter whatsoever with Michael Neal or any of the other people that might be litigants against this organization, nor do I plan to. And I plan to recuse myself from any of those actions. But you can choose how you want to handle things here, and if you don't trust me, that's your business. But my position is, this is a fiduciary, and I've always, for my whole history with this organization, which dates back about 28 years, I have made this a primary duty as a fiduciary. But you decide how you want to handle it.
Mike?
I'll pass.
Nothing.
Darren?
Nothing.
Lynn?
Nothing. Chuck? Nothing. Joyce?
You guys have received the 2010 insert for the 1937 Law Act for your binders.
Do you have it on CD?
You know, it's on their website as well, so do with it what you will.
Thank you.
I don't think that's permissible.
Do you, what did I mean by that?
I know. Were you
doing
something else?
Oh, wait.
And?
What did I mean?
And?
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 I totally
forgot
about myself.
I have to do it while I'm thinking.
That was you, Tom.
If I don't do it while I'm thinking, I forget.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I just have two quick items.
Okay.
I can't write them down.
I will not be at Sackers, and I will not be at the latter, the only meeting in May. I will be...
Enjoy your vacation.
Yes, I will be on vacation. And I won't be here for the first meeting in June either, so I'll be gone for the next two...
Extended.
Well, for May and the May meeting and for the first meeting in June. And then also I want to extend a thank you to Michelle and Hank, because it appears that they will be attending the Stanislaus County Peace Officers Association meeting tomorrow evening. It is close to where I work, but unfortunately I have a city council meeting at the same time. So I am unable to attend, which I would love to be there. But I want to extend my thank you to the both of them for their efforts and communication and education on important matters. I'm sure they're going to get lots of questions. At least I hope they will. So.
And they're ready for them.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, and all board members should have received the strategic planning
workshop. Oh, gosh, I didn't.
For now. April 28th and 29th. This has a good outline and then summary and some of the history in the strategic planning sessions going all the way back to 2005. So it kind of gives you the background of what we're going into for the meetings at the end of April. And I think that is about it.
Yes, thank you. Nothing for me. So with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.